I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
But we welcome in a long, longtime friend of mine, over 50 years. I can't believe it. Worked our way through radio together from WLIR on Long Island to WNEW-FM in New York and on and on and on. If you want a complete resume of Michael Harrison, you can check out my book, FM, The Rise and Fall of Rock Radio, in which he plays a prominent part. And many, many years ago, he got into talk radio and has published and the editor of Talkers Magazine and is an all-around connoisseur and guru when it comes to social media, any kind of media, period. He's on top of that and social trends and such things. And I thought we'd bring him on to introduce a subject about which we've talked about off the air very often, and that's the role of the fan. And I'm not talking about the radio station, but I'm talking about the fan fanatic in sport, and the fact that Fox has proposed perhaps starting off the NFL season with a virtual audience, a CGI, a computer-generated audience. Michael, welcome in, and what do you think?
I'll tell you, Richard, this is interesting stuff, and I want to hope everybody listening is having a good Memorial Day holiday weekend. This is a real meaty subject, the role of the fan in the sports media complex, in the sports industry complex. You know how many radio stations around the country that do sports talk radio call themselves the fan? You know, they don't call themselves, some call themselves the team and the ticket and all different names, but the fan. I've always likened sports talk radio to news talk radio. News talk radio serves the interests of the voter, of the citizen, not the politicians, not the big companies, the voter. And sports talk radio serves the interests of the fan, of the people that keep the whole machine running. Look at how sports has grinded to almost a halt with the fan not being in the equation. So the idea of not having fans in the arena, not having them in the stadiums, it presents a very big issue in terms of how these games are going to be interpreted in the very future of sports, because I think the fan has been undervalued in terms of the role they play in the exhibition, in the event, and how it comes across both in the stadium, obviously, and on television.
Well, I wonder if the effect on the players, because to bring this around full circle to music, you recently did a podcast with Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull. And during that, he said, you know, I don't do this, and that wonderful baritone he has. I don't do this for the fan. I don't do this for the audience. I don't do this. I do it for myself. And the most gratification I have is when I go off the stage and somebody hands me a cold beer and I sit back and relax. That's why I do it. Do you think the athlete has a similar outlook, generally speaking, of course, or do you think that without the fan, it's going to be a whole different thing for them?
I think there's a degree of hypocrisy in that, both if an athlete says it and my good friend, Mr. Ian Anderson. If you're doing it for yourself, then why are you getting on that stage? And why are you continuing to tour? And why are you continuing to play wherever anybody will have you? I think that's more of an attitude about I'm not seeking artistic or critical approval. In other words, an athlete that says, I don't care what the sports writers say about me. I don't care what Richard Neer says about me. I I care about myself. And very much that kind of a player is playing for the fan, like Bill Belichick. The fans love Bill Belichick in the New England area because he is operating for the team. And when you operate for the team, you operate for the fan. The press may not like him. He may not come across as the friendliest, warmest guy, but the fans love him because he's representing them. We have that. We have that in politics with Trump. One of the things about Trump's base that the voters who love him love is that he doesn't care about the press. He doesn't care about the money. Obviously, he plays to his fans, to his supporters. That being said, the sound of the crowd, the boos, the cheers, the level of intensity. Who they're rooting for. Haven't you ever seen in games where the fans actually start to support the underdog or in such exhibitions as boxing or professional wrestling, which is not a sport like baseball or football, but it is a big exhibition where there's a relationship between the performers, the athletes, and the audience. The audience is a component in the outcome of the game. That's why they say things like home field advantage. That's why watching a World Series game in the ninth inning of the seventh game is electric, because the fans are all on their feet and they're waving their towels and they're pounding their feet. Imagine if that game were being played in
a
studio.
How come last World Series, every road team won every game?
That means that they were able to overcome home field advantage. It means that they were able to be that much better. It doesn't mean that every game is going to go to the home team, but it means that the teams that beat them have to go that extra mile or have to be that much better.
What about negative incentive? I mean, I've talked to some athletes who say, I love it when they boo, because I love it when I can rub their nose in it when I hit a game-winning home run on the road. That gives me more incentive to play harder.
I think that there are those athletes that feel that way, and there again you see the influence of the fan. In that case, the boos inspire him. This is not a referendum on home field advantage and the statistics contained. It's a point about how the fan's attitude plays a role. Either it can inspire or it can, you know, inhibit. But the fans being there matter. That's all I'm saying. And when they start to show games in empty arenas and empty stadiums, it's going to have an impact on the game. It's going to change the way it comes across. I'm not saying it's going to destroy it. I'm not saying it's going to be an advantage to one team or the other. It's just going to be a perceptible change. And those kind of changes, when you're talking about a tradition such as televised or broadcast sports, that's a very big deal.
Well, I'll give you some ammunition here. There was a recent piece in the New York Post, Daryl Strawberry, who said, the biggest mistake I made in my career was leaving the New York Mets as a free agent in 1990 and signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And they go, well, why? And he said, look, if you look at the numbers, he was on a Hall of Fame trajectory with the Mets. His numbers, had he continued to do that, would have put him in the Hall of Fame. However, when he went to L.A., he said, the whole vibe was different. He said in New York, the fans come early and stay late. In L.A., they come in the third inning, leave in the seventh. There's this whole attitude of, it's okay, it's just entertainment. It's not. And he said, I bought into that. And, of course, he had some problems with drugs and other things. But he said that whole thing gave me, there was a lack of incentive. And he said, when I came back to New York and played with the Yankees, there was that vibe again where the fans really cared. And he had a couple of pretty good years with the New York Yankees before he retired. So there is a player who clearly was influenced by the fans, or so he says.
How about in terms of iconic baseball history, the great Jackie Robinson, who not only had a marvelous career with the very emotional and passionate Brooklyn Dodgers, the relationship they had with their fans in that day. You talk about team-fan relationships. The Brooklyn Dodgers were the peak of that syndrome. And then they traded him to the hated Giants. In today's world, it's a business. I'll do it, and especially if there's money in it. Jackie Robinson retired rather than betray the fans that adored him through his run on the Brooklyn Dodgers. He retired because he wouldn't do it. And
here's some disclosure, folks. Here's some disclosure. Michael is a big New England Patriots fan who's not real happy that Tom Brady, rather than retire, went to the Tampa Bay Bucks. Did he betray the fans, or was he just doing what was in his best interests?
Both. Both. And in the end, he's not doing what's in his best interests, unless he's a heartless, you know, robot who doesn't care about his legacy and doesn't care about his relationship with an entire region of the United States that considers him a god. I mean, if that has no value anymore, Richard, you know, somebody plays 2 years with a team, they do good, then they go elsewhere, even a 7-year, 20-year run, 6 Super Bowls, the stuff movies are made of, once-in-a-generation situation, what the hell are you going off to Tampa Bay for at the end of your career? You're not going to get the love from the fans.
I'll argue that point with you, because I think here's the thing, and you know this very well. There is a symbiotic relationship between him and Bill Belichick, and there is a question out there amongst fans. Is Belichick a great coach, or did he just have the greatest quarterback of all time?
It'll never be solved.
Question, though. Was Tom Brady the greatest quarterback because he had Bill Belichick as a coach, and would he have been as great with Jerry Jones or another, you know, Andy Reid or another great coach? And is it possible that part of Tom Brady wants to say, all right, I'll show you. I can be a terrific quarterback. Maybe I'm not going to be, you know, my peak year, but I'm going to play really great with a different coach on a different team.
Not a good enough reason. Not a good, a selfish reason. Not a good enough reason.
Selfish.
There has to be loyalty and there has to be character for sports to truly live up to the word sport. I really believe that. A lot of the coarsening of our nation and a lot of the callousness and the lies and the seeking victory as opposed to truth that's taken over our culture. Sports is a microcosm of culture. If there is not some type of a loyalty between players, teams, and fans, then there's something missing that really makes sports special. And in the case of Tom Brady, of course, that's what sports is about. Who would have been better off without the other? But the logical person says they were both better off with each other. Argue it all you want. We'll never know the absolute answer.
But see, when you talk loyalty, it's a one-way street in football especially, because the minute the coach or the general manager or the owner determines that you're not worth the money that you've been making, you're not contributing enough to the team in terms of, you know, risk-reward, you're out of there. And in the case of Brady, I think it was made clear to him, reading between the lines, that they really didn't want him back, that they thought it was time to turn the page. He was a lesser player. He still wants to play football. So you're saying he should retire and take those 20 years and those 6 championships and saying enough when he still has the burning desire to play.
Well, he's going to learn, like everybody who sticks around too long, that your career ends either by being knocked out in the ring or lying on the ice, the icy hard field in Minneapolis in a purple uniform for Brett Favre when he could have gone out 2 years, 3 years earlier as a hero in his home, you know, his home team of Green Bay.
Do we think do Green Bay fans, do fans think any less of Brett Favre for that?
They did for a long time. Someday, Richard, Tom Brady will be returning to Boston, to Foxborough, and they'll make a big deal to have a Tom Brady night. The fans will love him, but that's not going to happen for at least 5 years. It's just not going to happen because right now, the Patriots have the right to say to Brady, you're no longer the same athlete you were. We are a team-oriented operation. Please step down. It's too special a relationship. It's Jackie Robinson and the Dodgers. I mean, we've gone a bit afield of the original discussion of the role of the fan in a game, but I think this is an important topic. Now, there's no correct answer. I don't know how he feels. Of course, he's got the right to do what he wants. But stepping back as an observer, in the long run, he would be better off if 20 years of success were enough and he went out, you know, happy, a hero, and continued to be part of the culture of the team.
But everybody would like to go out on top. Everybody would like to go off, my final year, I have a World Series trophy, I have a Super Bowl championship. Everybody would like to do that. However, if you are an athlete, I mean, you have to understand that your career, you can work till you're 100 years old and doing what you're doing. If you're an athlete, you know by the time you hit 35, maybe even 30 in some sports, the clock is ticking. It's going to end for you. And yet this is what you've trained your entire life for. Your entire career is based around this. And you're going to walk away when you think, God, I still can do this. I still can be really good. Would you be willing to do that? I don't think you would.
Of course I would. I wouldn't be here so vehemently standing up for this particular point if I wouldn't do it myself. Of course I would. I mean, Rocky Marciano, who was before our time, he quit the champ boxing undefeated. He walked away. He just walked away, and for the rest of time, he is the undefeated heavyweight champ. 20 years of the kind of success that Tom Brady has, I don't feel sorry for him if he still yearns to play football. He should have learned a lot of lessons. And again, he's not doing anything illegal. And I'm sure the fans in Tampa Bay are going to have a good time. But the first time he starts throwing wobbly passes or gets tackled because he can't move out of the pocket the way Patrick Mahomes can, the fans are going to suddenly be less enthusiastic because he's a novelty there. You don't have generations of people who grew up cross-generational loyalty that exists with a player of that magnitude.
But guess what?
In his prime.
If he had stayed with the Patriots this year, and we heard it last year, Tom's slipping a little bit. The media would be on him if he played with the Patriots this year and didn't play that well. The fans would be on him. And I'm not saying that. I'd be the same way. I'd say,
well,
hey, man.
Wait till you see how the fans in Tampa Bay are on him when he doesn't play that well.
They're in a fantasy.
They're thinking they're going to win the Super Bowl. They've got the greatest player of all time. They're not talking about the fact that he's, you know, 43 years old. And Gronk, do you know how many games Gronk blew because he was playing injured and they put him in and he wasn't ready? Or some of their biggest victories were when Gronk wasn't playing. I'm not knocking Gronk, and he's a fun guy.
Does this guy sound like a bitter Patriots fan or what?
No, I speak the truth. I'm not a bitter fan at all.
Your objectivity has gone out the window when it comes to the Pats, and it's okay. I mean, that's why you're a fan. You're making your point. You're emphasizing your point,
you're
being what
so,
you are.
Richard, you're so wrong on this. And I'm sure that people listening to this are saying he's right, that this is the way I feel. It's about feelings. Look at how dismissive you just were about a fan. Oh, you're a fan. You're showing, like, it's like saying, oh, you're a liberal, or oh, you're, what's wrong with being a fan and expressing a perspective that a fan can understand?
Well, I will say this, and this is, Michael and I are good friends. We talk off the air all the time. Michael has told me in the past that when his team is not going well, he doesn't watch them. He doesn't really care about them. He says, wake me up when they're good again.
Absolutely.
And I maintain to him, that's not a true fan. A true fan is a guy that sticks with his team through thick and thin, who supports his team. See, there we go. A different definition, because you support your team no matter what.
Richard, everything I have said in this conversation has been that the owners, that the teams, that the sport itself, and that the media owe their allegiance to the fans. That was the premise that we began this conversation on. Not that the fan owes their allegiance to the multi-billion-dollar corporations that run professional sports. That's the whole purpose of having, you know, CBS Sports Radio or any number of the radio stations that we're being carried on right now. The great WFAN in New York. The whole purpose is to represent the interests of the fan in the equation, whose financial contribution, not only emotional, but financial contribution to the game is what keeps the whole thing in business.
I don't think the owners look at it that way. I think a lot of the owners look at the bottom line and how much money they can make. I mean, look at, you know, we're going to have to take a break here, but I want to get into this because owners have done things that are very fan unfriendly, personal seat licenses, things like that. Okay. Not in service of the greater good for the fan, but in service of their pocketbook. Let's continue this in just a moment. We'll take a quick break and be right back. More with Michael Harrison here on the CBS Sports Radio Network. All righty. And I'll be back tomorrow from 4 to 7 on CBS Sports Radio. And if you're listening in New York, I'll be in for Boomer and Geo on Monday morning from 6 to 10 right now. Editor and publisher of Talkers Magazine and Long History. Radio, television, every kind of media you can think of. Michael Harrison joins us, and we are arguing about owners and their relationship with the fans and loyalty, et cetera, et cetera. And my point about owners, Michael, is that they're not publicly owned except for the Green Bay Packers, but they're in it, A, to make money, or B, because they have an ego, because these guys have made money in other fields, and yet nobody knows who they are. But when they own a sporting franchise, everybody in the town knows who they are. And then there are a few owners who really, really want to win for the city, for the fans. And then there are the owners who, you know, like George Steinbrenner is a good example. He put out about $100,000 of his own money to purchase the New York Yankees back in the early 70s, a franchise that is now estimated to be worth $4 billion. So it is an investment as well. And if the fan plays into it, it's like any business where you want the fan to patronize you because you put a good product out, but that's not necessarily the reason that they do it.
Okay, well, I mean, obviously, I don't know where the word argument is. We have no argument here.
Well,
but I believe that if a team does not go to the furthest extremes it can within the rules and within the business practices of the league to put the best team on the field, contenders, they don't have to win the championship every year. That's not realistic. But provide a contender, occasionally a rebuild year. That's when you're loyal to the team, when it's an honest rebuilding year, not a rebuilding decade or a rebuilding century. When I hear stories about, you know, the long-suffering fans of the Chicago Cubs, you know, why are you suffering? Would you drive a certain brand car every time you bought a new car if they put an inferior product on the road? You wouldn't. You would switch brands. So I think that loyalty should be to the fans, not vice versa. The fans will be loyal to any team or any player that they feel is cares about them. And again, the media should represent the interests of the fans. Of course, a lot of these business people that own these teams are out for themselves. Some people have made a fortune putting a lousy team on the field as their method of doing business because they make money. People come anyway.
Well, look at the New York Knicks, who have been bad for so long, and yet they sell out Madison Square Garden. They make a lot of money. They've got a TV network, and I'm not saying they're not trying to win. They try, but they've been very incompetent at it. The reason I wanted to bring you on in the first place, though, is something that we kind of got off track here, and I think it was getting off track pretty well. But Fox is talking about putting virtual fans. Now, as a television consumer, as a television product, is that going to work, do you think? Is that going to be okay? Or would you rather see empty seats, no virtual fans, no virtual cheering and booing? What are your thoughts about that?
I think that putting a virtual audience is very dangerous because it will give the power to the network or to the station or to the cameraman or to the board operator, the director. It'll give power to the presenters to take on the influence of the fan, but it won't be organic. It'll be fake. So I think that it'll be contested. I think that if it looked real, where it defied, it didn't defy credulity, where people, suspended their disbelief and it looked okay, then you'd have tremendous controversy over how fair it is, because just having fans in the audience is not enough. They have to react in a way that is so nuanced and so precisely tuned to what's going on that field that it'll seem fake, phony, and contrived. It'll be fake news. It'll be fake fans.
Well, what if they can do that, though? What if they okay, we're playing at Yankee Stadium, Yankees Red Sox, and when the Yankees do something, yay, they go crazy, and when the Red Sox come on, they boo, or they sit silent when somebody hits a home run. I think they can probably gear that up and make it work. Would that offend you if they cut to crowd shots of people going crazy when the Yankees do something good? Or would you say, hey, that kind of adds to the experience? How do you think it plays as entertainment?
I think it might add to the experience or entertainment, but it'll take away from the organic nature of the sport aspect of it.
Yeah.
The fact that people... One of the things, Richard, about sports that separates it from almost every other form of entertainment is that, theoretically, the result, the outcome is unknown. Every one of the shows is different. And you don't know until the end what's going to happen. So that's the aspect of sports. The reality of sports is what makes it special. So anything that takes away from that reality will diminish that aspect of sports. Well, it could become a very successful reality TV show. We're going to see with virtual reality all kinds of things happening. I mean, there are video games now that look real, and the whole motion picture industry may become an interactive experience. So all of media is changing in regard to computer generated stuff. But I think that what we're going to see in the next 6 months to a year, that this is going to be current, news. Is I think that the CGI or the non-fan aspect of watching sports on television, because we can't go to the stadiums to see this, is going to show, it's going to underscore the point I've made of the role the fan in the stands plays in the presentation, the vibe, the feeling, and the product that we call a baseball game, a football game, a basketball game, a hockey match.
I might dispute that in that. Suspension of disbelief. See, I think people realize that these reality shows are fake, that they're not, the competitions aren't really real, that the outcomes sometimes are predetermined. And yet, when watching them, you're sucked into it and you buy it and you root for one person or the other. And I don't watch those competition, those Big Brother type shows, but I do watch a lot of home improvement shows. And I know that these property brothers aren't hammering nails and building the house from scratch the way they are, but the stories are so good that you buy into it. And I think that if they can fake it well enough, that fans watching on TV will forget the fact that it's not a real audience there, but it's a fake one and it's okay.
Well, I mean, look, you can make a case that the best sporting events you've ever seen are in movies that are not real. The best boxing matches I've ever seen are the Rocky boxing matches or in Raging Bull.
Yeah.
With Jake LaMotta. But I know when I'm watching it, I'm not watching a real sporting event. I'm watching
But when you're watching it, you're sucked into it thinking it's real, don't you? I mean, if you
level,
stop for a second, you go, yeah, this is a movie. But when you're into it, it's like real. No?
Well, that's suspension of disbelief. And so what you're saying, what you're really saying here is that fans would like fake sports. And that brings us to something that a lot of the folks listening to this can't hear, because we did this recently. We had a debate about wrestling. And you poo-pooed wrestling, professional wrestling, as a fraud, as fake. And I said, no, it's a true sports exhibition in which, yeah, the outcome may be known, but how it plays out is not always known. People are getting injured. Things happen. And the thing about wrestling that's so interesting, because it provides an example of what I'm talking about here, is that the reaction of the fans cannot be predicted. And quite often, careers have changed in professional wrestling because the fans reacted to a bad guy or a good guy in a way that wasn't expected, and it changed the course of that wrestler's career. Stone Cold Steve Austin is an example. He's an iconic sports figure and a pop cultural figure. He started out as a bad guy, and the fans liked him. And suddenly, he went in a different direction. The fan element has tremendous influence on the product, whether it's a reality show all the way, like professional wrestling, or the Patriots playing the Giants in an empty stadium with a simulated audience. It's all entertainment.
I reject the wrestling analogy because I think, you know, a guy, if you're a Yankee fan and Aaron Judge is there, you're going to root for him come hell or high water. And your opinion of him is not going to change unless he makes some major, major gaffe. But that's a subject for another time. We're out of time here. But I think it's a whole different kettle of fish when we're talking wrestling versus sports, where the outcome has not been scripted or determined in advance. But Michael, as always, great conversation with you. Hopefully the fans listening enjoyed it as much as I did, and we'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Have a good weekend.
Okay, that's Michael Harrison, editor publisher of Talkers Magazine and a media legend.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly!